Nation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Juvenile crime is on the rise and on the minds of just about everyone across the DMV. We've seen a wave of carjackings, robberies, and of course, deadly gun violence. Some of the incidents shocking, abhorrent, and almost unbelievable. Well, tonight we're sitting down with Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy to talk about that and other issues. If you have comments, if you have questions, give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Madam State's Attorney, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to jump right in and talk about the arrest of the 14-year-old girl who is alleged to have orchestrated what the reporting says is a gang-related hit on a school bus on May 1st. We've all seen photographs of the bus security video and the like of the initial incident where one of the three youngsters had a pistol and that it malfunctioned. But now we are hearing that a 14-year-old girl was allegedly behind it all. Talk to me about this particular case and what led you to the arrest. What led, according to what police are saying, to the arrest of this 14-year-old girl?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Always.
Absolutely. So, because this is an ongoing case and we're still investigating various aspects of this case, I really can't go into a lot of detail. What I can tell you is that the police department is working every lead. We are that search warrant, anything else that is needed to pursue justice in this case is happening. And the arrests that have been made thus far, we believe, represent the results of that investigation. I really can't say much more than that at this time because, number one, of the sensitive nature of the case in that it involves juveniles, number one. And number two, this is an ongoing investigation. So I'm going to be limited in what I can provide at this time, but just to say that we are all vigorously pursuing justice.
Certainly, you've been doing this for a minute now. This has to be, unless I'm mistaken, probably one of the most shocking things involving our young people for you.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that each and every time I hear about an incident involving young people, it is shocking and surprising. And the reason why I say that is because young people should be in school learning. They should be enjoying their lives, playing sports, pursuing their dreams. They should not be involved in the criminal justice system. So it is said every single time we have an incident like this. I don't ever want to be at a place where I feel like this is normal or that I'm comfortable, because I'm not. I'm shocked, I'm horrified, disappointed, upset, all of those things that our community members are. I feel that each and every time. But my job is to soberly pursue justice, and that's what we intend to do, and that's what we have been doing, and whether it involves adults or, in this case, children, we have to hold everyone accountable. And that is what we're working on with right now with our police department. And I just want to give a shout out to our department. They're doing a tremendous job under difficult circumstances. But we work together through these very delicate and sometimes complex and complicated cases to find justice for our victims.
Well, let's talk about another high-profile case in Prince George's County, and that is the case of Kendall Batson. As you know, he was killed just a little less than 2 weeks ago. Kendall Batson was the driver of a car heading to Wise High School back in March that killed passenger 18-year-old Kaylee Haygood. The first thing I want to ask is, do you have any updates on the information surrounding his shooting in Forestville? Do you believe that his killing had anything to do with the death of Kaylee Haygood?
So first let me, just again give my condolences to the family of Kaylee. To lose a child, at any age is horrific, but just as she's on the brink of graduating and pursuing her dreams, for her life to have been cut short due to an automobile accident, so devastating. At this time, and let me say also, the family of Kendall Batson, the same thing applies. I mean, this is a young man who was pursuing his dreams, and unfortunately, his life was cut short due to gun violence. So these are just tragedies, two young lives lost. At this time, the police investigation has not revealed a connection or relationship between the incident that happened where Mr. Batson was killed and the car accident where Kaylee was killed. So at this time, we don't know of a connection that could potentially change throughout this investigation, but right now, investigating both a separate incident.
Were you going to pursue charges against Mr. Batson in the death of Kaylee Haygood?
Well, at this time, the police department is still investigating that crash. Usually, it takes several months for the department to complete its crash investigation report. Once that information is turned over to us, we evaluate it to determine whether or not charges are appropriate. In this case, obviously, if charges are appropriate, unfortunately, they would be evaded by death in this case. However, the police department has not yet completed crash reconstruction report, so we don't have anything to evaluate at this time.
Prior to Batson's death this month, was that something that you believe you would have considered?
Well, if the report came back showing or determining that he was criminally negligent in the death of Kaylee, absolutely we would pursue those charges. But again, it's a little premature at this point to say whether or not charges would be pursued because the report has not yet been completed. So that report will be completed, and at some point, a determination of a potential fault will be made. But we're not there yet.
Yeah, and as you said, because of Batson's death, it really may no longer be an issue. We are talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about juvenile crime and other law enforcement, law and order issues in Prince George's County. If you have a comment for her, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. There is another case that I want to ask you about. For all intents and purposes, this case is now over. But this has to be one of the most horrific cases that I've heard of in recent memory in Prince George's County, and that is the Antonio Williams case, where he was last week, he was sentenced to 3 life terms without parole for killing his sister, stabbing his sister to death, and 2 young cousins. What do you make of this? Because all the reporting has been that, and he was, 25 years old. This was 6 years ago, 2017, that he was babysitting the children. His mother was working overnight a nursing shift, and they had awakened him because they were playing, and he stabbed them to death. What on earth is that about?
You know, it's senseless. You know, I sat through parts of that trial. Certainly, I was there for the family through the verdict and obviously the sentencing that occurred. You know, it's really hard to even imagine what would bring and I believe he was 24 at the time, about to turn 25. Mm-hmm. I think he turned 25 at some point, maybe right around the time he was charged. But I have no understanding. It's beyond comprehension that a, you know, 24, 20-year-old would believe that it's an appropriate response to annoyance of children, some children, to respond by killing them, you know. I don't know what was going on in his head. You know, we don't have any evidence that he's been diagnosed with anything. So there's no, you know, mental health cause or reason that we are aware of for his actions. Testimony did come out during sentencing about prior acts of violence against his former girlfriend. So it sounds like he was very old, had a violent temper, and was physical with at least his girlfriend, and obviously now we know what happened with his sister and his nieces. He did not take responsibility for what happened. He was not apologetic at all. He continues to deny his involvement, but, you know, the evidence was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And he got what he deserved. In fact, he got 6 life sentences. 3 of them are life without the possibility of parole for the death of the 3 girls. And then he got another 3 life sentences for child abuse.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about all kinds of law and order issues. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to Jonathan. Jonathan, calling from Maryland. Jonathan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing? My name is Jonathan Williams. I'm calling from the District Heights area. I'm a barbershop owner over in this area. And not only that, I have on my own live podcast where I speak out on the juvenile, you know, behaviors, just the delinquency period, you know. And not only another thing, was my son, my oldest son, was killed in 2020. Miss Braveboy was one of the state's attorneys in the case. She knows about my son, Davion Brandon, that was killed over in Prince George's County. Innocent kid, nothing, never been in trouble, nothing. Was out one night. This kid that had killed him had been in and out of the system several times. They kept releasing him with murders. This kid has 5 murders. They kept getting out and out and out and out. And my thing is this. Some of these policemen, they need to get out of their cars, start walking these beats, you know, and walking around these neighborhoods, getting to know some of these kids around there, just like I do. And you'd be surprised some of the things that these kids will tell you by themselves about what's going on. You know what I mean? They're intimidated and afraid to be outspoken because they're afraid of their lives. Then not only that, there are no programs
after-school programs at Prince George's County. There's no recreational centers, but they're building houses all around here. They put these little 24, 25-hour stores up that sell all types of paraphernalia, where they become an open drug markets, man, on the street. You can't even go in the store without one of the kids asking you, I got this, I got that, selling drugs. And these little people come up here, and they open these stores, and you got like five of them in one full watch.
Okay, Jonathan, thank you. You said quite a bit for us to digest, and I appreciate your phone call. I will ask the state's attorney about two points that you made, and I think the first one that he made, and we've heard this in the District of Columbia as well, about juvenile arrests, and they move through the court system, and then they are out. Why is that?
Well, let me just say, I don't know the specifics of the juvenile he's talking about, and I don't know if the cases happen in, you know, Prince George's, D.C., or another jurisdiction. But the juvenile system is different than that of the adult system. The goal of the juvenile system by statute is to rehabilitate young people. And so the steps that are taken and the services that are provided are different, and it looks different than the adult system. I can tell you that we have had some real hard discussions with our juvenile services, with our courts, about how we are treating young people. Office believes very firmly that consequences must be a part of rehabilitation, because young people have to understand that they can't just do whatever they want, that there are real impacts to their actions, and that impacts can be deadly, or it can cause serious bodily harm, or just mental anguish for victims. And so we have to treat when it comes to the consequences for these types of actions, we have to treat them in a way that will allow them to understand the devastation that caused. And so that's, to us, I mean, in some cases we get results that we, when children are taken away from the community for a period of time and they are given services, but sometimes the courts don't necessarily agree with our recommendation.
Well, hold on. I hate to forgive me for cutting you off. I've got to take a really quick break, but I want you to finish your point. And we also have some listeners who want to talk to you as well. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Brave Boy about juvenile crime and other law and order issues in Prince George's County. Lines are open all the way up until 8 o'clock, and she will talk to you and us. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking with Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Brave Boy about law and order in Prince George's County and other issues. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Madam State's Attorney, you were talking about some of the hard conversations that you've had with members of the court system in Prince George's County. What kind of hard conversations?
Well, really, I mean, when we make recommendations, sometimes when we ask for young people to be detained, we're not doing that simply to punish them. We're doing that because we are concerned about, number one, the welfare of the community. We certainly want our victims to feel protected. But we also understand that young people need to feel the consequences of their actions. And sometimes by letting them back out, they don't understand that what they've done is wrong, or that they can face time for the actions that they've taken. And so, you know, I think, again, the information is there, and I support that. But how we get to a person who's going to make better choices, we sometimes just disagree with the Department of Juvenile Services, certainly Defense Counsel, because, again, our job is to protect our community and also to protect young people from themselves sometimes. And so we care about everybody, but, again, we believe consequences must be a part of the rehabilitation process.
You spoke about being restricted by statute last week. In layman's terms, explain what you believe is hamstringing the work that you're trying to do.
Well, what I will say is that it's not hamstringing. And the goal of the juvenile justice system is an important one, and I support it, which is to rehabilitate young people. We know that their little minds and brains are still developing. We know that they can be completely different people in 10 years. So we don't want to necessarily impact them for the rest of their lives. However, the question of how do we go about rehabilitating a young person, sometimes we disagree on how to achieve that goal. And we strongly believe, my office strongly believes, that punishment should be a part of that process. And I liken it to, you know, when we were growing up, you know, our parents loved us, right? But if we did something wrong, they would hurt us. We would feel that punishment, and we'd say, okay, well, we don't want to deal with that again, so we're going to do the right thing. That is the level, to me, of consideration that has to be given in the justice system with young people. Some of them are dealing with mental health issues. You know, I looked at a report done by the independent monitor for the Department of Juvenile Services, and that's housed in the Office of the Attorney General. And one thing that struck me is that there has been an increase in suicidal ideation, in self-harm, and attempted suicide from those who are incarcerated. And that's probably reflective of the overall society. We are dealing with mental health issues. We are with substance abuse. We're dealing with a lot of issues that young people, maybe back when I was, you know, a young person, we didn't necessarily deal with. So it is a different approach that we must have with young people. However, we can't let them feel like they can get away with anything. And that's why we are very big on consequences, along with any support services that they need to get better.
Do you believe the statutes need to be changed so that more concentrated or intense forms of punishment along with rehabilitation can be applied that cannot be applied the way the statute is now?
Well, I think that the system has to change. I don't necessarily... There are some laws that have been put in place now that limit our ability to hold certain offenders accountable based on age. But I think the juvenile justice system itself has to have more investment. There's not enough system, our juvenile justice system, not enough educators in our juvenile justice system. And I think we have to rethink some of the programs that young people, you know, get when they're in the system. So I think there's a lot of work that has to be done. Changing the laws is one thing. I think really changing the attitude and the resources dedicated to the juvenile justice system is really where we need to focus.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy about law and order issues in Prince George's County. Let's go to Kim. Kim calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Kim. What's on your mind?
I was just calling. I heard the mention of the Batson case, and that particular young man had no criminal history and has been lumped in with the rest of the children who may have been involved in actual crimes. He was not actually a criminal before the car accident. There was no determination that he was a criminal at this point. But then the next thing for the I have for the state's attorney is that young man was receiving death threats to the point that he couldn't go back to school. And then he turns up dead 2-3 weeks after that child is killed in that car accident. Do you feel that he was actually really killed for just a carjacking or was a revenge killing?
Well, I appreciate that, and I said about is absolutely correct. We know of no prior criminal history involving Mr. Batson, and it seemed like it was a horrific accident. And again, that investigation is ongoing. What I stated, and you know, the fact that Mr. Batson received death threats, the police are aware of those that information, and they have pursued let me tell you, every lead. Prince George's County Police Department is, when I tell you, one of the finest departments when it comes to solving homicides in this country. They work very closely with the office. Together we have an over 95% conviction rate when it comes to homicides, and the department solves 70-80% of its cases, and sometimes it's higher. So we are a strong force when it comes to solving and prosecuting homicides. At this time, the department has not found a relationship or connection between the homicide and the killing of Mr. Batson and the accident that occurred. Now, again, that investigation is ongoing, so we can't make assumptions. We have to have facts. It is, you know, certainly, I mean, all of us thought, is this, was this a killing in retaliation? You know, what happened? I mean, I'm sure that that's a natural thing to think. What we think and what we can prove and what the facts bear out may be two totally different things. We have to follow the evidence so that we can solve the case. And I believe, and I'm very confident, that the Prince George's County Police Department will pursue every lead. And if there is a connection, we'll know. If there's not a connection, we'll know that as well. But at this time, a connection has not been made.
Kim, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tish, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I've been listening to you for several weeks, and you've been talking about recent crime. It just seems like I noticed in a lot of the conversations, no one's bringing up the church or any type of spiritual guidance. I did hear a quote where they're saying, people are not raising their children in a Christian way. Like, children don't even know God. They're not even seeking God. And that's goodness. So I think a lot of these kids are only seeing the street life, take it to the street, violence. They're not being, you know, raised in, like, as a Christian or being raised in a Christian life. So for all they know, they don't even have a future.
Well, Tish, not to speak for the state's attorney, but I would argue that a lot of these children need to have a come to Jesus conversation. And maybe that conversation, by the time they are under the purview of the state's attorney's office, then, you know, they are then need to lay prostrate before the law. And I think that's kind of what this conversation is about. I don't disagree with you about that, but as it relates to this specific, you know, conversation, you know, I would certainly, you know, argue that you know, by the time they are, you know, under the jurisdiction of the state's attorney and the court system, yeah, they may very well need Jesus or anyone from, you know, that they would need to worship to, you know, to turn them around. But that's just what I think. Tish, thank you so much for your phone call.
You mentioned, Madam State's Attorney, about a change of attitude. And I want to drill down a little bit more about that. Whose attitude needs to change? And the reason I ask that is because of the very horrific nature of the crimes that we have been seeing. Not all of them obviously deadly, but all of them scary. As you know, there were carjacking arrests of two 17-year-olds at Iverson Mall last week. I saw the video, and there's just this wave of carjackings. You were there at the press conference last September when County Executive Angela Alsobrooks announced that, you know, the youth curfew because of, you know, this wave of juvenile crime. And so, you know, when you talk about attitudes need to change, whose attitudes specifically are you talking about? Because I will tell you, your neighbors, my neighbors, a whole lot of folks are, you know, they move from a holistic way of thinking about this to that lock 'em up mentality, because people are scared, people are angry, and they are frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me just say everybody. And that's the real answer. I mean, obviously, parents who are not spending enough time with their children, who don't know who their children's friends are. You know, I hear parents all the courtroom say, not my child, or I didn't know this was going on, or let me spend some more time with my child. I think I can do a good job of changing their heart, changing their mind. That's great. But after they have committed a serious offense, they first have to be held accountable. So all of that pouring into them that you want to do now, you're going to have to wait until the justice system determines whether or not they're going to be at home with you, or if they're going to spend some time away from you. I mean, parents are not parenting, but how you parent, how you access your child may change based on what your child does. So my advice to all parents are to get more involved in your child's life. Know who their friends are. I remember when I was growing up, my parents knew who my friends were. They would invite them over to my house. They knew their parents. They would talk. They would have an idea of, you know, the influences that I was getting when I was away from their home. And if they didn't like it, guess what? I didn't get to hang out with that person. And I think old school parenting has to come back in style, because it worked. It kept a lot of us out of trouble and away from dangerous situations and away from bad choices. So parents have to change their attitude. The school system, how we deal with the issue, and we're going to be working on this issue upcoming, the issue of truancy. There are far too many children who are out of school. It takes way too long to report to the courts or get cases referred to my office for young people who've been out of school for 20, 40 days or more in our school system. So what are they doing if they're not in school? You know, these are the things that, so all of us have to change. Our office, we've made significant changes. I mean, we have been even more forceful in our recommendations with respect to young people who commit offenses in our community. And, you know, the court system, along with the Department of Juvenile Services, they have to take a real hard look at themselves. Are we, meaning the Department of Juvenile Services, they must be able to answer the question, can we really rehabilitate these young people in the community? Some of them who have committed very serious crimes, whether it's carjacking or multiple gun offenses, be real. Can you rehabilitate all these kids in the community? Which is, in some cases, what they'll say. Oh, we have a program for them in the community. guess what? If they're getting into incident after incident while they're in the community, maybe those programs aren't working. Maybe they do need to be away for a while. So I think we just have to be real. We have to come together. And I'm not trying to blame anyone because, again, the system, the juvenile system is one based on rehabilitation. So we all have to understand that and accept that as a principle. But how we get to young people who are rehabilitated, where the community is safe and they are safe, that's really the answer or the question that we have to answer. And again, my office believes in consequences. You can't tell me that a child who's committed a carjacking can say, don't do it again, and then be done with it. No, you have to have real consequences, which in many cases means you're not going to go home for a while so that we can provide services. But those services must be there. And so that's, I think, where we need to have a conversation with our legislature, a real conversation about how many they're putting into the Department of Juvenile Services. I think we have to grow those resources, ensure that the services are being provided and not just having them on paper, but they're actual services that are being provided and that there's a system of accountability on whether or not these programs are actually working.
I think your parents and my parents were part of that same club because as a young person, when I looked at, you know, possibly doing something untoward, and I had already been given the choice of the possibility of either dealing with my father or dealing with my with the police were a safer bet. So let's be clear. So that, like I said, that, you know, that fear of my father was enough, you know, for me not to, you know, to even speak out of turn to an adult, much less commit a crime. But that was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Let me let me go to Florence, calling from Maryland. Florence, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. Madam
Sure.
State's Attorney, I am so ecstatic to hear you say those words. So my question for you today is, what are you doing with the Maryland Guardianship Program? Because I've penned several letters and emails to you and really haven't gotten a response.
What is the Maryland Guardianship Program, Madam State's Attorney?
I'm not sure what she is referring to, and I apologize. I've not received a letter from you, but I am happy to provide my email address. I'm sure the station can provide that to you so that you can send it directly to me, and
yeah,
I'm happy to look into it.
Yeah, because it is a program for which adults and juveniles, but in this case I'm referring to adults because my mom was victimized by the PG County court system in reference to this guardianship program that was put in place to protect the elderly, to protect the disadvantaged children. And it has not worked. And like I said, I sent several letters. And yes, I will once again reach out to you tomorrow again. But, you know, she was just victimized time and time again by the people that are supposed to be put in place, which made me contact you.
Florence, I will instruct the producer to get your information. And then we will make sure that we pass it on to the state's attorney. The Maryland guardianship, the reason why she may not obviously be familiar with it is because it is not under the state's attorney's office. It is under the court system. So
yes.
So not in her preview. So I'm sure, you know, Madam State's Attorney, you didn't need me to defend you in that particular garbage. But
just,
just as a point of information, because it at least it gave the impression that this was something that was under your purview that is not. So I wanted to make sure that our listeners understood that. But
well,
But
well, if I could speak for a moment, it's not the program itself. It's the laws that are being broken that is under the purview of Madam State's Attorney that I contacted her about. So if someone steals or perpetrates crimes against the elderly, that is a crime that Madam State's Attorney does have under her jurisdiction.
Oh, absolutely. And if there is a specific, incident or claim or complaint, that can, our office can investigate that along with the Prince George's determine whether or not criminal charges are appropriate. So that absolutely can happen. But I am not familiar with your letter, so that's why I'm saying I'm happy to, get those directly so that I know I have them. And then if there are specific claims, not general, but specific claims and with specific victims, then those can be investigated by our police department and by my special prosecutions unit to determine whether or not criminal charges would apply.
Florence, Florence, hold on. Someone will grab your the line and get your information, and I'll make sure that it is passed on to you. But thank you so much. I did want to talk to you about a couple of other things before I run out of time. I want to talk to you about the new Firearms Enforcement Unit and Narcotics Unit. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so what we have seen is a rise in gun cases. Last year, I started my office started indicting every single gun case that came through the court system. So those cases are now being handled by more senior and seasoned attorneys. And we are, asking for appropriate sentences in those cases. We are working very closely with the U.S. Attorney's Office to refer cases to them for federal prosecution, but we also handle a number of those cases within our office. Since the beginning of the year, we've indicted close to 650 gun cases alone just this year, and so we know that that is a very active unit. And we wanted to separate the issue of guns from other criminal issues. Used to be a unit that prosecuted both gun and drug cases, but the sheer volume of cases and the fact that we are focusing on holding people accountable for gun crimes, we decided that we would separate those two units. The other issue that we're seeing and the reason why we needed a narcotics intelligence unit, which is the other unit, is because we've seen a significant rise in fentanyl cases. We've also seen a significant increase in the volume of marijuana and other drugs that are being sold in and around our county. So we are focusing on the high-volume drug dealers, as well as those who are, peddling fentanyl and other drugs that are drugs of death. They are drugs of death. And we are seeing even young people in our schools using drugs, overdosing in our schools. We've had about 3 or 4 young people die over the past couple of years due to overdose, and about 29 or 30 of them have overdosed but did not die prayerfully and thankfully. But that is a big issue. And, of course, these adults who have overdosed, who have died, who are recovering. And so fentanyl is a drug of death. It is a death drug. And so we are focused on not only those who are using it or those who are doing the street-level transactions, but we are also focusing on those who are a part of the supply chain. So we wanted a unit to focus on the intelligence behind the street-level deals. So I'm really excited about those two units. We're working very closely with the police department. We have an excellent relationship there, and we are bringing these individuals to justice, and we're getting a good result. So I'm excited about these two new units.
As you know, recreational marijuana will be legal in the state on July 1st. What impact do you believe that will have on your office and your work? And when I say your office, I'm talking about your work, not the employees.
Yes. Well, I think the immediate issue, because we have not prosecuted, low-level marijuana users, right, for since 2019. I think that, you know, people who are using what we consider low-level, which is 10 grams or less, those individuals were written citations for the most part by police, and we were not prosecuting low-level drug users. Drug dealers, yes, we would prosecute, but drug users, we weren't doing that. So in terms of how this will impact us, drug dealing is still illegal, so we would still pursue those cases. Where we're going to see the biggest, I think, change is not with the legalization, but with another bill that was passed, which essentially makes the odor of marijuana not cause to search a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be significant because about 40% of the guns that are seized from our streets in Prince George's County come from car stops, let's say traffic stops, where the odor of marijuana is present, and then that gives the officer probable cause to search the vehicle. Once they conduct the find the weapon, the individual is typically not charged on the drug charge, but on the weapons charge, right? And so we have been able to seize again, 40% of the guns. So I think last year we had about 1,250 guns seized from our streets, and about 500 or so of them came from traffic stops. So what we are concerned about, and what I when I testified in Annapolis about the impacts on the justice system and on the safety of our community, is that those are guns that we would no longer be able to seize. That those individuals who may be criminals, who may be prohibited from carrying a gun because they are underage or they have a prior criminal history, or they have a history of mental health issues, we would no longer, or the police would no longer be able to have the probable cause needed to potentially remove a very dangerous weapon from our community. So I think that's a big problem. I know the governor did not sign the bill, but he allowed the bill to go into effect without his signature. I think he recognized that there were some significant issues, but challenged the bill. So he didn't veto it, but he did. He didn't sign it either.
There are so many other issues that we could talk about, but I think we covered some of the most challenging and important issues, at least for this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again for spending some time with us as we continue to try to navigate this difficult issue of law and order and juvenile crime in Prince George's County, as well as other issues. County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy, I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.